Tonight on EWTN News Nightly.
Dear brothers and sisters, I am happy to be with you in this, the first general audience of my pontificate.
In his first weekly address, Pope Leo XIV sends a message, issues an appeal, and pays tribute to his predecessor. It all started as a friendly meeting on trade. It devolved when President Trump confronted the president of South Africa with a video. Plus,
you can't possibly agree that it is a prudent thing to do to have this hearing at 3 a.m.
I imagine that we would have the sense of urgency to complete the task in the time frame that we set.
Debate on President Trump's big, beautiful bill is starting to get ugly. Why some Republicans are holding all-nighters to get the budget package passed.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much for being with us on the feast day of St. Christopher Magallanes and companions. I'm Eric Rosales. Our top story tonight, the question remains, can House Republicans finally get the one big beautiful bill across the finish line? For hours, the House Rules Committee prepped the bill for floor action after several conservative Republicans and GOP leadership met behind closed doors with President Trump to try and close the deal. However, several sticking points remain, including state and local tax deductions, known as SALT.
The SALT caucus, as they call themselves, it's not everything they wanted, but I think they know what a huge improvement that is for their constituents, and it gives them a lot to go home and talk about.
The bill now provides up to 40,000 SALT write-offs for 10 years for those who itemize on their taxes. That's up from 30,000 in the original version. But Freedom Caucus Chair Andy Harris says the bill has gotten worse.
We're further away from a deal because that SALT cap increase, I think, upset a lot of conservatives. Again, the conservatives are pushing for some balancing spending reductions. We actually stopped negotiating just before midnight because we actually had a deal that was then pulled off the table.
Democrats offered hundreds of amendments. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries claims that millions of dollars in Medicaid cuts will affect a vast number of Americans.
It would hurt children, hurt seniors, hurt families, hurt women, hurt people with disabilities, and hurt our nation's veterans. If enacted, the GOP tax scam would represent the largest cut to health care in American history.
Another amendment would have prevented cuts to SNAP.
$300 billion in cuts to food assistance, programs like SNAP. The Republican reconciliation bill would kick more than 3 million people off of food stamps.
The bill also defunds Planned Parenthood, long a Republican target.
It further defunds women's health care. It defunds cancer screenings, prenatal care, postpartum services, fertility treatments, preventative care. 96% of Planned Parenthood's clinical work has nothing to do with abortion.
Some Republicans say it's the best they're going to do.
I'm a deficit hawk, but I can't not pass this and then expect something better to happen. I think we'll end up with a worse bill when the Democrats control our destiny, and that's not a good thing.
Just to give you a little bit more background, besides the tax cuts, the Republican-backed One Big Beautiful Bill also includes increased provisions related to immigration enforcement. It'll increase the number of ICE agents and even building the border wall. The bill also increases defense spending and energy policies. However, it will raise the debt ceiling by some $5 trillion. And according to government projections, it will also add approximately $3.3 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. Well, we have some sad news to share with you. A longtime Democratic member of Congress has lost his life to cancer this morning. Catholic Virginia Congressman Gary Connolly passed after announcing just weeks ago his esophagus cancer returned. He was known as a fierce defender of democracy as the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee. His family posted on X that he passed peacefully at his home, surrounded by family members. He was 75 years old. President Donald Trump welcomes South Africa's president to the White House. The meeting comes as the relationship between the two countries has tanked, and it all has to do with allegations of genocide. The Trump administration has launched a series of accusations at South African's government, claiming that it's seizing land from white farmers, forcing anti-white policies, and pursuing anti-American foreign policy. White House correspondent Owen Jensen joins us now with more. Owen.
As President Donald Trump and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa sat down together in the Oval Office, they exchanged some kind words, and then a short while later, President Trump played a video that we want to warn you includes some violent language.
Excuse me, turn the lights down. Turn the lights down and just put this on. It's right behind you.
And on the screen in front of reporters, top Trump administration officials, Elon Musk, and even some pro golfers, a video played of a communist politician playing a controversial anti-apartheid song that includes lyrics about killing a farmer. President Trump using the White House meeting to confront South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, accusing his country of failing to address the killing of white farmers.
These are articles over the last few days. Death of people. Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know. To pick anyone, white South Africans are fleeing because of the violence and racist laws.
But the two leaders openly disagreeing.
And they're a small minority party, which is allowed to exist in terms of our constitution.
But you do allow them to take land.
No.
You do allow them to take land.
Nobody can take land.
And then when they take the land, they kill the white farmer. And when they kill the white farmer, nothing happens to them.
No. There is quite
nothing happens.
There is criminality in our country. People who do get killed, unfortunately, through criminal activity, are not only white people. Majority of them are black people.
Experts in South Africa say there is no evidence of whites being targeted, although farmers of all races are victims of violent home invasions in a country that suffers from a very high crime rate.
President Trump has already cut all U.S. assistance to South Africa and recently welcomed several dozen white South African farmers to the U.S. as refugees. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now is Father Don Bosco Anyala, editor-in-chief of ASEA Africa. Father, thank you so much for coming on the program. Can you describe to us the scene in South Africa right now?
Thanks for having me. The situation in South Africa remains, I would say, normal like other African countries that are largely peaceful. And so the church is vibrant there. The Catholic bishops have a very vibrant communication department. And any issues that arise, they are able to weigh in. So I would say normal.
Now, President Trump has claimed that a race-based genocide is unfolding there in the country. Is that something that you're seeing?
This is something that has been talked about, but there is not any evidence to that. In fact, in February, there is a judge in the court that dismissed the idea, saying it was clearly imagined. It's not real. And I think, as the South Africa president pointed out, there are criminals in the country, but the Africans, the blacks, in fact, bear the most brunt more than the whites.
Now, the meeting today...
As I said, the church is quite vocal, and if there was such a thing, we would have had it, because we are constantly in touch with the communications officer of the Catholic Bishops Conference.
Now, no doubt the heating in the Oval Office between the South African president and President Trump became very heated. Are you expecting any productive results from this meeting?
My take is that I think the president from South Africa handled it well. He was calm, he was collected. He is, I think, a good diplomat. He emphasized on the need to have both countries discuss on the way that are beneficial, mutual benefit for both countries. My thinking is that it will be beneficial, to be profitable for both.
All right. Well, Father Don Bosco Ayala, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to leave it right there.
Thanks for having me, and God bless.
God bless you. Well, for the first time in more than a month, the Papal General Audience was held in Rome, and for the first time ever, it was held by Pope Leo XIV.
La parabola del seminatore parla proprio della dinamica della parola di Dio.
Pope Leo continued with Pope Francis's Jubilee series of the catechesis on the theme, Jesus Christ, Our Hope. The Holy Father emphasized that every word of the gospel is like a seed sown in the soil of our lives, highlighting that the soil is not only in our heart, but also the world, the community, and the church. And joining us now from Rome is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director for EWTN News. Matthew, great to see you. As we know, general audiences happen every week, but obviously this is the Pope's first general audience. What sort of insight did we get from it?
Yeah, well, as you note, Eric, this is Pope Leo XIV's first general audience as Pope, so it had attached to it a certain additional significance. So there was a lot of attention paid to what he had to say, and consistent with the very calm and measured approach that we have seen throughout his pontificate in these early weeks, he went about his business talking about the catechesis of the day, which is a reflection on the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, the parable of the sower of the seeds. And he's picking up the threads that were left by Pope Francis at the time of his death, the reflection especially on Jesus, our hope, that in Christ is our hope. And the reflection then really turned swiftly to sort of unpacking the parable of the casting of seeds, the sowing of seeds across all types of terrain in every possible setting. And as the Holy Father said, that we represent the ground, and how are we receiving these seeds of evangelization? But as he says, the gospel, those are the seeds that all of us have to take in. And how we respond to it in exactly the same way how different soil responds to it tells us everything about our response to Christ. It is the type of reflection I think that we would anticipate from somebody who was a missionary for many, many years in Peru, headed the Augustinians as a missionary order, and somebody who then is picking up immediately the threads of Pope Francis.
And you've been following very closely the homilies and other sort of speeches that he's made and announcements that he's made. What have been the major themes so far?
Yeah, Pope Francis and his successor, I think, would be very pleased with many of the things that Pope Leo XIV is talking about. The new Holy Father has been consistent in reaching out in peace. The first thing he said as Pope was, peace be with you. So, in other words, that the peace of the risen Christ be with you. So he has made peace, focusing very heavily on Ukraine, of course. Today he had a reference to the situation in Gaza, the deteriorating humanitarian situation there.
And no doubt he's actually brought some enthusiasm to Rome. What are the people saying there?
Yeah, the Romans are very excited at having the new Holy Father. The fact that he's American, in fact, doesn't seem to be deterring anyone from really being fascinated, being quite intrigued by what he's saying and doing. He is somebody who is described as serene. He's calm. And that's something that I think the Romans are definitely appreciating. We are seeing that level of enthusiasm by the size of the crowds at the Regina Caeli on the days just after his election on May 8th. That Regina Caeli was attended by about 100,000+ people, which is unusual even for a great Regina Caeli on a Sunday morning. The general audience today, his first, unusual in the sense that it was part of this early day of his pontificate, but 40,000 were in attendance. That's a high number, certainly, right, for a general audience.
Well, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insight.
Great to be with you, as always.
And also during his first general audience, Pope Leo XIV renewed his appeal for dignified humanitarian aid to enter Gaza, as well as calling for a cessation of hostilities. The Holy Father joins a growing number of international leaders putting pressure on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. While trucks have entered the territory since the 11-week blockade was lifted, the United Nations says so far no aid has been distributed. A UN spokesperson says it's because the road designated by the Israeli military is too unsafe. In a potential break with President Trump, Israel could be preparing to strike nuclear facilities in Iran. That's according to U.S. officials. New intelligence shows Israeli military movements that suggest an imminent strike. However, it could also indicate that Israel is trying to put pressure on Iran to abandon parts of its nuclear program. It comes as the Trump administration is pursuing a diplomatic deal with Iran. So far, the Israeli Prime Minister's office has not commented. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Vice President J.D. Vance speaks on the Trump administration as well as the church. We'll find out what he had to say. And the immigration debate goes on between the courts, Capitol Hill, and the White House. We have analysis. Welcome back. Vice President J.D. Vance spoke of politics, his philosophy, and his Catholic faith in a recent sit-down interview. The vice president met with New York Times reporter Ross Douthat while he was in Rome attending Pope Leo XIV's inaugural mass. During an hour-long interview, Mr. Vance spoke about the balance between being a Catholic and an American political leader. When asked how his Catholic faith shapes his politics, the vice president responded, "The purpose of American politics should be to encourage our citizens to live a good life. And part of that is good, dignified work. And part of that is having a high enough wage that you can support a family. That very much flows through my Catholicism." The vice president was also asked about the ongoing debate over immigration in the country, and he turned his sights on the U.S. Supreme Court, saying, quote, "I saw an interview with Chief Justice Roberts recently where he said the role of the court is to check the excesses of the executive. I thought that was a profoundly wrong sentiment. That's one half of his job, and the other half of his job is to check the excesses of his own branch. You cannot have a country where the American people keep on electing immigration enforcement and the courts tell the American people they're not allowed to have what they voted for. That's where we are right now." And the legal fight continues between the executive and judicial branches today as a federal judge accuses the Trump administration of violating one of his orders, an accusation the administration denies.
While we are fully compliant with the law and court orders, it is absolutely absurd for a district judge to try to dictate the foreign policy and national security of the United States of America.
This stems from the deportation of eight people. The Trump administration confirmed the group was deported, but didn't say where. Lawyers for the deportees say that they were taken to South Sudan, even though they had no ties there. The federal judge based in Boston says the move violates an order he gave last month, requiring sufficient notice to be given before such a deportation can take place. Also this week, the Trump administration floated the idea of suspending the right of habeas corpus. When confronted by lawmakers on the issue, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem seemed to struggle with her understanding of the principle.
So, Secretary Noem, what is habeas corpus?
Well, habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country
Let me stop you, ma'am. Habeas corpus, excuse me, that's incorrect. Do you support the core protection that habeas corpus provides, that the government must provide a public reason in order to detain and imprison someone?
Yeah, I support habeas corpus. I also recognize that the President of the United States has the authority under the Constitution to decide if it should be suspended or not.
And joining us now for the ongoing immigration debate is Andrew Arthur, resident fellow of the Law and Policy at the Center for Immigration Studies. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, the Trump administration has accused the judiciary of disrupting its immigration agenda. You just heard that the vice president say that the courts shouldn't tell the people they're not allowed to have a vote, any say in this. What are the courts doing about this, and what's your interpretation of the law?
So every individual in the United States is, under the Fifth Amendment, entitled to due process before they are subject to a loss of life, liberty, or property. So due process is the standard that we follow, Eric, but the truly important part of that is the due part of due process. Due process is, you know, it changes depending upon the status of the individual, and certainly that's especially true as it relates to immigrants to the United States. In that case, due process is an individualized right, that differs depending upon how long that individual has been here, how they entered the United States, and what ties they have to our community.
Exactly. I mean, that's even regarding the right of habeas corpus. Can you explain to us quickly what exactly that is?
Sure. Well, talking about a 12th century legal principle in a short period of time is going to be hard, but it is a Anglo-American tradition that dates back to the Assizes of Clarendon in 1166. And what it does is it guarantees that any person who is charged criminally can be brought in front of a district magistrate. So that they can answer to the charges. And it literally means in Latin, as all good Catholics know, you have the body. And the you have the body in that case is the individual who is doing the detention. So it requires the individual who is detaining someone to bring them forward to a dispassionate court so that they can make a determination as to whether that detention should continue.
And it's important to note that the way that our laws are written right now, habeas corpus extends to people living in the U.S. illegally who aren't U.S. citizens, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Habeas corpus applies to everyone who is here, regardless of their status. But it's not the only protection that those individuals receive. Again, you have a due process, right? When you talk about individuals, though, who are being detained and who the president is attempting to remove under the Alien Enemies Act, habeas corpus is the only review that those individuals can get and the one that the Supreme Court has called for them to receive.
Well, Andrew Arthur, thank you so much for your insight. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, President Trump hosts a very special guest in the Oval Office. Find out what he thought of the meeting. Plus, we take a closer look back at the last few weeks in the church as today marks the 1 month since the death of Pope Francis. Welcome back. President Donald Trump hosted a very special visitor to the White House on Tuesday, according to the president's special assistants. Louis Prevost, the oldest brother of Pope Leo XIV, got a chance to meet the president in the Oval Office. Earlier in the day, the president noted the Holy Father's brother is a big fan of his and looked forward to getting him to the White House. The Florida resident is a U.S. Navy veteran, joined the U.S. delegation at the Vatican during a meeting with the Holy Father. Earlier this week, White House correspondent Owen Jensen got a chance to ask the president about the meeting.
And how was your meeting with the Pope's brother yesterday?
Great. Fantastic guy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And today marks the 1 month since the passing of our late pontiff, Pope Francis. His legacy is kept alive as Pope Leo echoes his messages and the church keeps him in her prayers.
Now, of course, buried in Santa Maria Maggiore. The fact that he's still very present in the minds of the Romans and certainly pilgrims who are coming here for the Jubilee is attested to the fact that it's about a two-hour wait at the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore just to see his tomb.
Durante la messa,
during Mass, I strongly felt the spiritual presence of Pope Francis accompanying us from heaven.
Today we have taken up the series of catechises on the Jubilee theme of Christ our Hope, begun by Pope Francis.
The death of Pope Francis filled our hearts with sadness. In those difficult hours, we felt like the crowds that the gospel says were like sheep without a shepherd.
It's hard to believe it's already been a month. We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have a good night. God bless y buena suerte.